Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Intervehicle Communication Department here at Car Talk Plaza. Enlighten me, please.
Well, you might remember that from time to time, we both of us have mused that we could really use a way for drivers to communicate more subtly with each other.
No, yes.
What do you got? You got the horn. It's very little variation in the horn. You can either tap on it, and it says, hey, get out of my way. Or you can lean on it, and it says, hey, get out of my way, jerk. And that's about it, right?
Well, that's true.
And then there are the always popular hand signals, but there's not much variety there either. So there's really no good way to say, for instance, I'm sorry or thank you. We suggested maybe there should be a light system or signs, but that's all complicated stuff.
Not to mention the fact that it lends itself to individual creativity.
It does. Really not want
to encourage.
Yeah. Well, naturally, a Japanese scientist has come up with a brilliant, I think, brilliant solution. Get this. A tail.
Wow.
Like a dog's tail. It goes on the back of the car, and it's operated by a joystick. And when you want to thank somebody for letting you in, you wag the tail.
Or if you see a cute girl.
When you make a mistake, the tail goes down, like between your legs. I mean, you always know what a dog is thinking by his tail. Is that brilliant or what?
Now, what does it mean when the car lifts its right wheel in your direction? Anyway, if you have a question about your car or anything else that you think we might be able to handle, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Heidi from Lacey, Washington.
Hi, Heidi.
Heidi from L-A-C-E-Y?
L-A-C-E-Y. It's about 50 miles south of Seattle.
Okay, we're with you.
I've got a 95 Toyota 4Runner. Got quite a few miles on it, and I'm trying to sell it. I'm a single mother going to school, and I've got to get rid of this truck. Well, it's got an interesting noise coming out of the rear end. When I start to accelerate, it makes an interesting clink, clank, clink kind of noise.
When you first start off from a dead stop?
Uh-huh, and when I also come to a stop, it makes that clink, clank, clink, clink noise.
Yeah, that's bad.
But it also has a sugar, 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 sugar kind of a noise that goes along the speed of the car. And it kind of sounds like a train underneath the car.
So it speeds up and it slows down.
So if you slow down from 60 to 30, the frequency of this thing, which is very regular, slows down to half.
Exactly.
Do you notice any vibration at high speed? Or do you dare to drive at high speed? Or maybe has the vibration been there so long that you're not aware of it?
I might not notice it.
And if you're getting rid of this vehicle, why do you care what noise is?
Well, I already marked it down $1,000 from Blue Book, and I'm just wondering if I should leave it there.
Oh, or is it something terrible?
Or do I have to fix it before I sell it?
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
So you don't have a regular person to whom you take it who would give you some...
Not at all, no.
Not at all. Maybe that's why it's in such bad shape. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that it's a universal joint. Yeah. Clink, 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 clink. And what's the other noise again?
It's like kind of a whirring or like a sugar, 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 sugar.
Sugar, sugar,
like
sugar.
Could it be described as a kind of a squeaking noise? Like, maybe not quite as.
Don't let him talk you into
it. No, the power of suggestion is very strong here. Heidi, you are falling into a deep sleep. Could it be more like a gentle croaking as opposed to a shh?
You're just determined to make it into
a universal joint. Well, I am because I have no ready alternative.
It's not a universal joint.
Well,
because it's the wrong sound.
Well, the tinka 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 is the right sound for a U joint. I mean, if when those needles.
I never heard her say tinka tinka. Yeah. I heard you say tinka tinka.
No. Heidi, say Heidi.
Yes.
Have we met before?
No, sir.
Did you not say that one of the noise you get is like a tinka, tinka, tinka noise?
It was a kind of a clink, clank when I start out.
Clink, clank.
Mm-hmm.
Clink, clank, which is the classic noise you get from a universal joint whose roller bearings are worn out. And then if the joint is dried up and rusted, you can get a Maybe
I do kind of get a creaking. Yeah. I do.
He
but I was more concerned about
it,
the train sounds underneath the car.
Yeah.
Well, I think the train sound could all be coming from, and the vehicle is the right age to have a seized or worn out or both universal joint.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's something that your mechanic will be able to figure out in 3 minutes.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and if you're discounted at $1,000 for this, you ought to go and get this fixed, because for a couple of $100 you can get this fixed. And if the thing sounds great, you can jack that price way back up.
Hey.
Yeah. So what are you asking for this thing, in case we have anyone out there who's interested?
I'm asking $35.
$35. That's the discounted price.
That's the discounted price.
So yeah. When you fix this U-joint, you're going to get it back up to, you know,
$47. Yeah.
I think I'll maybe go like four and see
four.
What happens.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good. I have a strong feeling that that's what it is, but
I have to say, I agree with you.
Be ready. You may get a call from the Stump the Chumps people.
No problem.
All right. See you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good luck.
Oh, God. 888 Car Talk.
I think it is a huge
one. Oh, sure. 888.
I was just giving you a hard time.
Sure. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yes, hello. This is Frank from New Boston, New Hampshire. I need your help.
Hey, Frank. What's going on?
Well, I have a 2003 Subaru Forester with 121,000 miles on it.
Good for you.
Yeah, I love my car.
Yeah.
The driver's side window, when I put it down, if I put it down all the way, it makes a slight clunking sound at the bottom. But then when I put it back up at the very top, it sounds like the glass is going to break. It's like metal slamming into glass.
Mm.
If I don't put it down all the way, it doesn't do it.
Yeah, but if you don't put it down all the way, then you can't rest your arm on the window.
That's the problem. And I really want to do this myself instead of paying, you know, $90 or $100 an hour to have a mechanic do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
well, how willing are you to take things apart that you may never be able to get back together again?
Well, you see, that's what my wife said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good question.
Are you handy?
I'm fairly handy, yes.
Give us an example of the most complex thing you've done. It doesn't have to be on a car, but, you know, around the house. For example, have you ever built, like, a homemade nuclear reactor?
No, but I have replaced a water pump in a 74 Oldsmobile.
Okay. How many weeks did that take?
That took me about 4 hours.
4 hours.
And that's about what it takes us.
That's
so,
not bad.
So
not
you consider
bad.
Yourself, so you have tools.
I do.
And you consider yourself handy. And do you have a book on this car?
I don't.
You don't.
You
Well, that might be a good thing to start off with.
Alternatively, you could go to your local repair shop,
mm-hmm.
and ask them if they were for. If you here's what you do: you buy a dozen donuts.
Okay.
You buy a dozen donuts, and you when you take the dozen donuts to your local repair shop and say, "Guys, would you do me a favor? Would you look up on Alldata or Mitchell's or whatever you guys have, and find out how I replace the window regulator? Because that's what you need."
I need a window regulator.
Yes, yeah. You do. Now, it may turn out that on this car, you have to buy it with the motor. I don't know.
Okay.
So what's wrong is inside the door. You know, so if you can find out, you get a printout about how to do this, you can go ahead and replace it. And if they say to you, oh, yeah, no, we replace these all the time. We'll do it for you for $100. Give them the keys.
Yeah, I mean, if you can figure out how to take the inside door off, that might be all you have to do, because
okay.
Then everything will be right there looking at you, and it might be obvious.
Yeah, it's possible that a bolt has come loose or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was hoping, is it wouldn't be costly.
Yeah, well, if you can take the inside of the door off, you can watch the thing go up and down.
Right.
And it might be immediately apparent what's going on. If not, take the other door off, and you'll see what the difference is, and you'll know what's gone.
Right. When he means the door, he doesn't mean the door. He means the inside door panel.
Right.
So, right, Tommy's right. You can take both doors apart. And by the way, when you take them off, just throw them away, because you're never going to put them back on.
You're never going to get them back on.
No, you buy a roll of wallpaper, you know, let the, you know.
And no, it's not that
you
bad.
You buy a roll of contact paper.
No.
Right, at the craft store. You buy a roll of contact paper at the craft store, and you're going to cover that. Get some nice paisley stuff. Because just throw them. You don't need those inner handles. That stuff is all, you know, unnecessary.
It is unnecessary. But, you can always reach through and open the door from the outside. if the window goes down.
Right, you can't do that if you can't put the window down. Anyway.
Come on, he called with a perfectly legitimate question.
And we're, making
it fun.
In our own perverse way, we are trying to help Frank. And what we're trying to help him by persuading him not to do it. We're trying to help him.
I should take my wife's advice and go to the mechanic.
You should, but not before you monkey around
a little bit.
After all.
How are you going to learn?
After all, if Magellan's wife had said to him, Ferdy, don't go. You're never going to make it all the way.
You can't make it.
Because he didn't make it all the way.
No, he didn't.
No, but the rest of his guys on the ship did. But, you know, so you need men need adventure in their lives.
Exactly, and it's got 121,000. Why shouldn't I mess with
it? Why shouldn't you mess with it now?
See, I don't think women understand that. I don't mean that in a bad way. But guys need to do stupid stuff from time to time.
Exactly.
And you're embarked on a project right now, Frank, that could be in that category.
Hey, Frank, I wish you the very, very best. Please call us and let us know how you make
it. How many pieces they have over left over. And by the way, you heard it here first.
I will email you pictures.
All right. Excellent.
Good
That'll
luck.
Be great.
Thank
See
you.
See you, Frank.
Goodbye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Katie. I'm calling from Baltimore.
Hi, Katie.
Katie. Now, wait a minute. This could change everything.
Oh, no, why?
I mean, I presume that Katie is short for Catherine.
That's right, with a K.
However, it's Catherine with a K, and you are the first Catherine with a K from Baltimore that we've ever encountered in 100 years of doing this show. You might be the only Catherine
seems like
with a
years.
K in the entire city.
I'm in.
Well,
wow.
I do like Katie as opposed to Kate.
Thank you. So do I.
Katie is.
And I thank you for introducing yourself as Katie, because if you had said, my name is Catherine from Baltimore.
What would you have done?
I would have immediately jumped and put my big foot in my mouth and said, well, that's definitely Catherine with a C, and I would have been wrong for the second time in 10 years.
Wow.
Wow.
So anyway.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. My question actually stems from an incident I had a few days ago with my good friend and housemate, Todd. We were getting into my car. Todd sat in the driver's seat, and I was sitting in the passenger seat, and I closed my door without incident, but Todd's door got caught on the sidewalk. You know, firmly stuck in the sidewalk.
Yeah. Right, because Todd's what? A fat. Never mind.
Come on. So, let's be careful here.
That's actually really late. Anyway, so instead of easing forward to release the door like I would have done, Todd gunned the engine, jerked the car like 3 or 4 inches, nearly smashing into the parked car in front of us, and then slammed the door shut.
Kind of a ruffian, isn't he?
He is. So I was a little bit nervous and worried and, well, you know, a little bit outraged, really, because I thought he lost control of my car. And I turned to him and I said, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah.
To which he said, very smugly, Bernoulli. So then he goes on to explain his theory of why accelerating the car releases the door. He tried to convince me that the rush of air under the car somehow created lift enough.
Right!
Oh, I'm so glad you're laughing. He's crazy.
Bernoulli?
I know he's...
In fact, if there were any Bernoulli effect, yeah? It would be just the opposite.
Oh, man.
It would suck the car down.
Oh, sweet. He's wrong, right? He's
wrong. He's not only wrong, he's crazy.
Well, tell me, am I right, though? So I think that when you go forward, you're just getting to a lower part in the sidewalk so that you can swing the door shut.
If you're lucky.
But in
the meantime, you're tearing the bottom of the door apart.
What's the make and, more importantly, the year of this car?
It's a Honda.
Honda Civic 97.
I can't tell it was a Honda. Maybe 90s. She already told us that.
No, I didn't tell you.
Yeah. I mean, what I always do, unless no one's looking.
Yeah.
His wife always says, hey, fatso, get out of the car.
Get out of the car. And when you do so, don't forget, the door opened up that far because you weren't in it.
Right.
So if you just get out of the car... And then as you get back in, you close the door.
As you're sitting down,
then this doesn't happen. And that's what he should have done. Otherwise, you tear up the bottom of the door, and more importantly, you scrape the paint off of it.
Okay. So there's no physics principle involved here?
There is a physics principle. It's called laziness.
Yeah, it certainly has nothing to do with the Bernoulli effect.
All right, that's all I need to know.
But he just smugly said Bernoulli.
Oh,
huh?
Absolutely. Can you just say it? Todd is wrong.
Well, maybe he meant that his buddy Joey Bernoulli did it like this. I mean, you don't really know. But Todd is wrong, yeah.
All right, good.
Tell him he's not wrong. He's crazy.
He's crazy.
He's crazy.
Tell him to get his fat butt out of the car next time and close the door the right way.
Thanks.
See you,
for calling, Katie. Bernoulli, idle. He was quick.
She almost bought it.
You got to give him credit for being quick. What are you doing? She said. He says, Bernoulli.
Well, there is an advantage when you're quick like that. It becomes indisputable what you say.
Because it seems like you've thought it through.
Right.
Well,
of course. Have you noticed on this very show, when someone calls and we give an answer right away, no one questions it.
I know.
When the answer comes after a long process of questions and groans and, yeah, and shoulder shrugging, that's when you often hear the ball. Oh, jeez. Look, I am not going to ask you if you remember last week's puzzler.
You're not. Why not?
Well, it's for personal reasons. I don't want to be reminded about how close we are to the new puzzler season. The end of the puzzler's vacation, man.
Yeah, that would be like next week. Uh-huh.
What did I just say?
Something about not reminding you that the puzzler is coming back next week.
But you're a prince, you know that? All right, so what is coming up after the break, then?
After the break, where we usually talk about the puzzler, but we won't this week in deference to my brother.
Uh-huh,
instead,
uh-huh,
we will be discussing automotive determinism.
Okay, and of course we'll have more of your car questions, so please don't give up on us yet.
We'll be back in a minute.
I'm married to my John Deere tractor. That's how I keep my life in gear. I'm riding high and thinking green, working in the farming scene. No better life to live, that's clear.
And even though all the creamers in the NPR fridge simultaneously curdle whenever we say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and a desperate plea for divine intervention.
All right, this came in from a listener named Kate.
Okay.
Hello, guys. I would like to know what I need to do in order to ingratiate myself with the car gods. In the last year, I've been through no less than 6 cars. I've been run off the road and totaled, rolled and totaled, been on fire, and had antifreeze fumes poured into the car, had no less than 3 wheels come off while driving, 2 within 100 feet of each other, blown a slave cylinder, had a radiator blow up, lost all electrical functions, had a horn start to blow and not stop, and I will stop there. Even though there's more, what have I done to offend the car gods? And what can I do to make amends?
You know, as they were reading this list, I started thinking that if you drove more, all these things would have been happening to you, too. Because I don't know what she's owned.
Wow.
But these cars have been predetermined that they were going to be jalopies.
Man, unbelievable. She ends the letter, help! Sincerely, Kate. Well, gee, that's a list.
Well, the other thought I had is that somebody might be after her. I mean, you lose a wheel.
You,
and you
lose
get rolled
three of
over.
Them.
You lose. I mean, this
if you lose a wheel and another wheel and another wheel.
Yeah, then someone's.
I'm beginning to wonder if it's the place where she's having her car fixed.
No, I think it's a jealous ex something or other.
That could be ex something or other.
Could be ex football player. Who knows? But someone needs two in the hat here, and it ain't her. She needs to have somebody taken out because someone's after her. You couldn't have luck this bad unless you were driving like an MGTD. Oh, God.
I'll be driving the little baby tomorrow.
You will? You're driving it to the junkyard? Is there a ceremony involved?
I'm not driving it to the junkyard.
Oh, that's right. That's my job. My brother never junks a car. I'm always left to do the dirty work. You know, some guys have to clean up after some other people.
Now just mind your own business.
You're driving the car tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, we'll see. Anyway, as I might have mentioned earlier, the Puzzler is due back very, very soon.
Yeah, you mean like next week?
Hey, on the eighth day. Anyway, this makes it imperative that any one of you guys out there who have good Puzzlers, send them to me ASAP.
Yeah, my brother basically took the summer off from Puzzler duties completely. He didn't think about anything.
I didn't.
So now the new season's here, and he's got what? Bupkis.
Well, I mean, not complete bupkis. I mean, I'm kind of like, you know, semi-bupkis land. But if you have a good Puzzler, feel free to send it, you know, because it can't possibly hurt, right?
I mean, you just thought of this now. Why didn't you tell people to do this, like, 3 weeks ago?
Because it wouldn't have been a Puzzler vacation if I had been doing it. If all summer long I was encouraging people to send puzzles, then I would have been in the Puzzler mindset myself, and it wouldn't have been freedom from the Puzzler. I had complete freedom for 2 months. I didn't think about it until you started talking about it today.
All right. You can email all this stuff to my brother from our website, cartalk.com.
Other than that, I don't want to hear about the Puzzler for the rest of the show. But more importantly, if you have a question about your car, we're ready. Give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Linda from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And
where are you from?
Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Yeah. What's up, Linda?
Well, I have a puzzle that I'd like you to help me solve. It's a mystery that's turned out to be, I kind of get my feelings hurt when I tell friends what happened because they don't believe it, and especially my husband. And I'd like you to tell me just if you can solve it, I guess. What happened is about 5 years ago, I had to go to Boston. My brother lives there, and I was driving home, and I had a very short time, so I drove straight through, which I don't recommend because it's a 23-hour drive. But I was leaving Boston on a very hot, sultry day and had the air conditioner full force in my 1984 Chevrolet Caprice station wagon. Had 123,000 miles on it at the time. And I stopped at the first service exit on Highway 90, and sure enough, my radiator was boiling over.
Uh-huh.
And so we cooled it down, and a mechanic put in some more coolant, and I took off down the road. But because I had 1,200 more miles ahead of me, at least, I decided I'd better stop and check it again before the service stations closed down. So I stopped at the next service exit, and sure enough, the radiator was boiling over again. And this young gentleman said, I know what's wrong with your car. I have one just like it. Your radiator cap has been put on backwards.
Backwards?
Backwards. So we sat there, cooled off the car. He put in some more coolant. He did whatever he said with that cap, and I drove home. I drove home through the night, through Cleveland, through Chicago. I didn't have any problems with that car. Eventually, I did have to replace the radiator.
You got us, kid.
Really? My husband said there's no way this could have made any difference.
Well, I mean, you're sure you remember what he said, huh?
I'm positive. I wouldn't forget it.
Because you can't put it on backwards. I mean, there is no backwards.
Oh, that's what everybody says. I don't know. All I can tell you is this mystery man fixed my radiator, and I drove home with it that day a long way. That really asked a lot of it.
Uh-huh.
Backwards. Now, what could he have said instead of backwards? I mean, one thing that could have happened is he might have just loosened the radiator cap. Because if you have the radiator cap on, you build up pressure.
Wait a minute. I should warn our listeners. This may be an unencumbered by the thought process answer.
No. This is standard cooling system knowledge that everyone knows. That there are times.
We'll see about that.
There are times if you have a hole in your radiator that happens to be in the right place.
Okay.
Then, if you put on the cap and build up pressure, that pressure will cause the thing to leak. Whereas if you leave the radiator cap basically off, you will not build up pressure, and if the leak is above the level of the coolant, then you won't lose anything, and you can go forever.
Well, the leak always winds up above the level of the coolant.
Sooner or later, it does. But if you have the cap on, you'll just keep boiling stuff away, spewing it all over the place. Whereas if you don't worry,
so I've
used this technique 100 times. I mean, come on.
Your hypothesis is that Linda had a pinhole leak near the top
near
of her
top
radiator.
Near the top of the top can. Exactly.
I see. And leaving the cap loose, i.e. putting it on backwards.
Backwards, yeah.
That enabled her to drive back home to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Without overheating. Now, I suspect what really happened, and the reason you had to have the radiator replaced, is that it was plugged up and not leaking. That true, Linda?
Yes, it was. It was plugged up.
It was plugged up. The reason it overheated early in the trip is the sun was out. It was hot.
Uh-huh.
And as you continued to drive, you did two things. You drove into the night, which where the air is cooler, and that helped the situation, ameliorated the situation.
Wait a minute, if she drove for 23 hours, where was she? Up in the North Pole? It was dark for 23 hours?
No.
No, but she the other thing she did, without realizing it perhaps, is drove more slowly.
I don't think so. No, I didn't drive slowly. On Highway 90, no, I don't, no.
She didn't care.
I wanted to get home.
Why?
Well, because I had to go to work the next day.
She wanted to get away from Boston.
No.
All right, then what happened? You said you had a stuck thermostat.
No. I think the radiator cap was on backwards.
I love you. I just want to know if you can help me solve this.
No, the thermostat was stuck, and by luck, when you went into that,
come on! You're going to ask us to believe
it broke. It broke in the full open position.
This kid, this 17-year-old kid who worked on he couldn't even get a job in a real gas station. He had to be on I-90
and doesn't know that you can't put a radiator cap on backwards.
You expect us to believe that this kid did some kind of magic? That
he did nothing.
A coincidence.
He did nothing.
All right. The real problem is Linda can't explain this little phenomenon to people. We've got to help her to explain it.
Yes, that's it.
She doesn't want to know what the hell happened.
No,
she just wants to know what can she tell people that's credible.
It's like a black hole in my past. Well, I can't talk about it.
First
it
of all, the cap could not have been put on backwards. The only other thing I can imagine that it was never on completely. And that you were overheating because it wasn't fully on. And then when he did his reversal, so to speak, he in fact put it on properly and stopped the thing from boiling over. That's the answer. As lame as it is, I'm sticking with it. No, I think that's what it is. This guy put it on correctly. He seated it. He turned it all the way until the little arrow on the cap pointed towards the little overflow tube. And if you don't do that, the cap won't seat.
Maybe backwards. Oh, you might have something. Maybe
what he meant by backwards was not seated. He may be a little backwards.
Did he seem a little backwards?
No,
this
he
fellow
seemed very nice, and he helped me so much.
He certainly did. He allowed you to get home on time.
Right. I think he seated the cap where previous mechanics that had checked your prior to your trip that had checked your level didn't turn the cap far enough and didn't allow it to seat, and thus when pressure began to build up, it boiled over into the overflow, and I think that's it. It only took us an hour to get there, but
yeah,
we're there, Linda.
That's what backwards means. I kept thinking of backwards as backwards rotation, but the arrow might have been pointing the wrong way. He thought magically the arrow should be pointing toward the back of the car, and it was pointing toward the
arrow.
He had personal experience. He said he had the same car.
The arrow should point north.
Which way was... okay.
Which way was your car for you? See you, Linda.
Thank you.
That's the explanation. Did you write it down?
Woo-hoo! I've got it.
All right.
Thank you so much. Okay, have a good day.
Bye.
Have a good day yourself.
Now, it shouldn't have taken us that long to get there.
No, it does take a while. I mean, things, you have to go through a process.
The thought process.
What?
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Chris calling from Olympia, Washington.
Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Well, I have a 92 Subaru Legacy station wagon.
You
do? It's got 230,000 miles on it.
Wow.
Now, this is the third Subaru that my wife and I have owned. The first one had over 300,000 miles on it.
Great.
Before we got rid of it.
Where are you guys going with these cars?
All over the place. We used to live in Colorado, and now we just kind of drive around the city, maybe up to Seattle once in a while.
Oh, okay.
So you haven't had to leave town for a while.
Yeah, for a while.
Good.
In my dream, though, is to be able to pass this car on to our children.
How old are your kids now?
Well, our oldest is five.
I was just guessing.
Okay, if it's any credit, my wife thinks this is an absolutely ridiculous idea, of course. But but I have
we made it to speak to her.
She's pretty much right.
Well, anyway, the problem with the car is...
It's got problems?
It's got problems.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we're going around a corner slowly, the car will decelerate, and it almost sounds like it's downshifting.
And your foot is not on the gas.
The foot is not on the gas, correct.
Yeah.
So you're coasting around a corner.
Coasting around the corner.
But it seems like you're going slower than you should be going if you were really coasting freely.
Exactly. It noticeably decelerates. Like,
yeah.
Like the brakes are being applied almost. And it makes kind of a whirring noise like a downshift.
Like a downshift. Well, it may be downshifting.
But it's not downshifting, but it kind of sounds like it.
But it is an automatic.
It is an automatic, yeah.
Well, how do you know it's not downshifting?
I'm not downshifting.
No, no.
But,
it's
guessing.
It's an automatic, and they will downshift. So it may be that if you're going around this corner in second gear, and as it starts to slow down, it may just downshift into first, in which case you'd feel exactly what you're feeling.
Well, let me tell you, too, that there's another symptom.
Yeah.
Is that if we park the car immediately after this happens,
huh.
We put it in park, and the car will rock back and forth slightly 3 or 4 times.
Right, so you've taken your foot off the brake.
Yes.
You turn the key off, the thing's in park, and the car will, for example, roll forward a little bit.
Yes.
And then backward.
And then back, and then forward, and then back. What's the distance, an inch or so?
Yeah, a couple inches.
Okay. All right. Any chance we can talk to your wife, Chris? No,
well,
I think that's
crazy.
I think that's normal. I think what you have is wear in what's called the parking pole. You know, when you put the thing in park, you're engaging basically a locking mechanism that locks the final drive so that if one wheel tries to roll down the hill, the other wheel tries to go and roll up the hill. So that your car can't move. But what happens when this parking pawl is worn out, when it rolls backwards a little bit, it'll kind of hit the stop, and it'll bounce off that and go forward a little bit. And then go back and forth. So there's some kind of oscillation involved until the thing finally comes to a rest. And that mainly is because of old age.
Yeah, I was going to tell you. That is due entirely to the 230,000 miles that you got on it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry about that.
Now, is this related, though, to the turning problem?
No, I think the turning problem is what Tommy said earlier. I think it's downshifting into first. And here's how you're going to find out if there's anything going on with the turning thing. When you do this turn and you feel that it's starting to slow down, put it in neutral.
Exactly.
And if it speeds up in neutral and doesn't continue to slow down, then you know it's not anything with an axle binding or brake hanging up. It's merely that the thing was maybe downshifting into the lower gear. Because in neutral, you've disconnected the transmission from the wheels. And if, in fact, everything rolls freely, then nothing's binding up.
Okay.
And I think you'll be satisfied when you do that everything's okay.
Okay.
So, and I know that as time goes on, see, so your oldest kid is 5.
Right.
Is it a boy or a girl?
He's a boy.
Your 5-year-old boy. And so in about 11 years, he's going to be ready for this thing.
Yes.
Well, I remember when
can we talk to your wife seriously? I mean, Chris, you are a wacko.
Well, I'm going to say...
I think it's reasonable.
No,
think,
you're good. I'm going to say in my defense...
No, it is not reasonable.
In your defense and my defense, Chris, I had, when my younger son Andrew was maybe about 8, I got a Dodge Colt Vista. And he looked at that thing and he said, Dad, this is the sorriest excuse for a car. And I said to him, Drew, you are going to learn how to drive with this car.
Yeah.
And more than that, you're going to drive this thing around for some years after that.
Yeah. He's now 40. He still hasn't learned how to drive.
But he drove. So he turned 16. He got his license. He drove that very car, and he drove it until he was in college.
Yeah.
Then he gave it back to me with no gas in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this kid's going to drive this car, and I'm sure you'll be calling on a regular basis with one problem or another. But these two problems I don't think are anything to worry about.
No.
Okay.
See you later, man.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, it's time for us to take another break.
And what will we be doing during this break?
What'll we be doing? Well, nothing. The break is for our stations. We'll just be goofing off, killing time, annoying the people around us.
Oh, basically just like the rest of the show.
Exactly. So what's next, anyway?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because when we come back, I will try once again to help you understand the thought process of engineers.
Ah, more news from Nerdistan, eh?
You got it.
All right, well, we'll be back with that and more of your car questions, so please stay tuned.
I used to smoke a Honda in a 54 two-tone Ford. A duct tape on the windows, coat hangers on the door. Baby used to turn her head in shame, but I would just laugh and say, it's okay, babe, we're doing the tailpipe drag.
And even though bottle genies insist the first two wishes be used to make us disappear whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the story of two engineers.
Ready?
Yeah.
Two engineering students are walking across a university campus, and one says, "Hey, where did you get that great bike?" The second engineer explains, "Well, I was walking along yesterday, minding my own business, and a beautiful woman rides up on this bike, throws it to the ground, takes off all her clothes, and says, 'Take what you want.'" The first engineer nods approvingly. "Good choice," he says. "I doubt the clothes would have fit you." Oh, man, you can walk down the street here, and all the guys at MIT would say, "What's so funny about that?"
Hey, by the way, the Puzzler, you may have noticed, is not here this week. But next week, the fall Puzzler season begins.
Is this like the big network debuts, the fall TV season, all the new shows?
Well, yeah, it's like that, except I can't cancel it. Anyway, if you've got a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Troy calling from Columbia, Maryland.
Hi, Troy.
Columbia, Maryland.
What's up?
Well, I've got a 1999 Mercury Mystique, and periodically, my starter makes a grinding sound whenever I start it, whenever I attempt to start it.
Yeah. So when you first turn the key, you hear...
Exactly. It doesn't happen often. I may go a week, maybe just a couple of days before it happens. But when it does happen, it's one right after the other. If I try to attempt to start it three times, it'll do that. And then on the fourth time, it'll start.
And how long has this been going on?
I've had the car for going on, I guess, about a year now, and it's been happening periodically, at least over the course of the last 8 months.
Didn't you have some misgivings about buying a car whose name was so close to the word mistake? No, huh?
Yeah, I never gave it any thought.
I was walking down the street just about 2 days ago, as a matter of fact, and I saw parked a Mercury Mystique. And I said...
Well, you don't see many of those.
You don't see many of them. And I said, what were they thinking when they came up with that name? I mean, it's a nice name.
Well, it had the carbon flawless.
But the car was about the plainest, simple, basic. It's a Ford Contour.
Right, exactly.
A cheap piece of junk. A low-priced,
right,
not exactly luxurious car.
Right, exactly.
And they call it Mystique.
Well,
like you'll hardly believe this.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a misuse of that name.
And
they're going to have to wait a generation.
And I never thought that it's so close to mistake.
I mean, they're going to have to wait a generation before they can reuse it. You know, Pontiac had in its stable, and I owned one in the 60s, a Le Mans.
Yeah,
Pontiac Le Mans, right.
And that was a great car, and even though it wasn't a race car, I mean, its high-performance characteristics really befit its name.
Right.
And then a generation later, they come up with a new Le Mans.
Yeah, a three-cylinder Le Mans. What the heck was that all about?
Which is a Korean junk box.
Well, you know, the car looked, I mean, it looks really nice.
Yeah, it's a cute little car. I will admit that.
Yeah, so...
And yours is in good shape.
Yeah, it's in real good shape.
Except
for the starter.
Except for that starter. And it's a mystery.
Well, is this an automatic transmission?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's too bad. What I think is wrong with it is that you have a bad couple of teeth on the flywheel.
Oh, on the flywheel.
You know how this thing works? The starter has teeth on it. You know, I don't know about...
A little gear.
A little gear on the starter motor has like a dozen teeth. And the flywheel has, you know, I don't know, 100.
Okay.
If you have a bad couple of teeth on that flywheel, once in a while, the thing is going to stop when you turn the key off so that those teeth are exactly opposite the starter.
Wow.
So when you turn the key to start it, you're trying to mesh good teeth from the starter motor with those broken, chewed up teeth on the flywheel. Now, you might ask, what caused these few teeth to get broken? Well, somebody could have tried to start the thing while the engine was already running.
I see.
It could have been you, Troy.
No, not me.
But that's often what causes it, that the thing is running and someone turns the key, and you'll get that awful sound, that...
Right, right. Oh, that's exactly how it sounds, too. It's funny how you've got that down.
Well, it's a classic. This is a classic.
Oh, yeah. So here's my suggestion. You live with it until it becomes intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to fix this, you've got to pull the transmission out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Gee, you know, there should be some kind of reconstructive procedure. You know, if you had a couple of chipped teeth,
Richie Bronco do
you'd
it.
Go get a crown.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
Jeez, you know.
You'd go to Dr. Richard C. Brown in Harvard Square, and he would fix a... Maybe he could make more money doing...
I think we'll put Richie to work on the side. Fixing,
what's he wasting his time
fixing
doing fly people's
wheels.
Teeth?
See you, Troy. Good luck.
He could be fixing ring gears instead.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you know what time it is now?
Time to dance naked under the harvest moon?
I hope not. No, it's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we track down a caller from a previous show to see if they went away happy.
Or if they just went away, period. Who's our lucky player this week?
It's Steve from Charlottesville, Virginia. Remember Steve?
No.
Neither do I. Fortunately, someone gave me the cliff notes. Turns out Steve called us because he had just won the auction for a 66 Ford Econoline van on eBay.
I remember him now.
Like I said, I reside in Charlottesville, Virginia. The thing about the Econoline is it resides in Bakersfield, California. And since I'm getting married in June, a friend and I are planning on doing sort of a road trip bachelor party and driving the vehicle from California to Virginia. And so my question sort of is, what kind of things might I want to have with me to try to ensure that if we do break down, we can still get it the rest of the way.
A tow truck.
And it's certainly worth a shot.
And how long have you given yourself for this trip?
We're probably going to try to do it in a week to 10 days, depending on how long we decide to stop in Utah and go fishing.
You're not going to go fishing? Fishing? What, are you crazy?
Well, they can fish while the engine's getting rebuilt. Now, Steve is my kind of guy.
I'm sure he is, but what did we actually tell him? Because I don't remember.
We told him that the van would undoubtedly break down,
oh, yeah,
probably multiple times, that he'd be stuck in godforsaken places, and he'd never make it back in a week to 10 days, and that he should go for it. We said it sounded like a great idea.
So our advice was, no matter what, go for it. It'll be an adventure. Well, let's see what happened. Steve, are you there?
I'm here.
Look, before we keep...
Wait, where are you?
Are
you in Charlottesville?
I'm in Charlottesville, and so is the truck.
All right, well, before we debrief you, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or by the Greyhound Sea America ticket that we sent you.
Not as far as I know.
So what happened? Did you go for it?
Yeah, I went for it, and you guys were 100% right. There were multiple breakdowns, and we eventually had to give up the project in the middle of nowhere, Utah.
Middle of nowhere, Utah? I've been there
twice.
What do
you mean? Wait, you gave up the project. How'd you get the van back?
Well, I had to pay somebody a lot of money to put it on the back of a truck and bring it all the way from Utah to Virginia.
So the initial recommendation that we gave you, which was to bring a tow truck along, was the best advice.
Well, I didn't bring one, but I did use one.
You did use one. And does it run now?
It does run. It stayed running the whole time. It was just sort of an accumulation of problems. mostly engine-wise, which we were dealing with. We replaced a thermostat. Then we broke, of course, the thermostat housing. They had to put on new thermostat housing, which is pretty good for a couple of guys who didn't know anything about working on vehicles.
But think how much you know now, Steve.
I've definitely quadrupled my knowledge.
Excellent.
But we eventually we blew a tire in Marysville, Utah, in the middle of nowhere.
Oh.
And as we coasted into the parking lot, and I got out sort of disgusted because I think that was our third breakdown of the day. A man on a four-wheeler, rode immediately up to the truck and sort of looked at me and said, "Are you those guys from Car Talk?"
No kidding.
Within seconds. And as we soon discovered, our jack and our tire that we had in the back of the truck did not actually fit on the truck.
They were just some jack and some tire.
The same man actually found us a proper jack so we could change our tire. So we were saved at least for the next 30 miles.
Did you get any fishing in?
When we got to Utah, I pretty quickly got on an Amtrak train home because I was running out of time. But I think my friend did stay there and fish.
What, he didn't come to your wedding?
He then made it back in time for the wedding. He actually put on the tux and got in the wedding. I made it with a few days to spare.
Oh.
It's a good thing you made it with a little while to spare. It would have been tough running up the aisle in your coveralls.
True.
Well, Steve, I got to say, you're a gamer, man, and your wife is lucky to have you as a husband.
That's what she says.
That's excellent.
Keep it up, man.
And thanks for playing Stump the Chump, Steve.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Look, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or you can call and in all likelihood stump us right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hi. This is Betsy. I'm calling from San Francisco, and I have a question about my 1999 Miata convertible.
But you're not from San Francisco.
Originally.
No, how can you tell?
How can we tell?
Well,
yeah, when did you move out of New York?
Oh, years and years and years ago. Is it really that obvious?
Oh, jeez.
Okay,
you,
so
Betsy.
I have a New York question.
Oh, you do?
How about that?
Good.
Okay. So here's the thing. Is I've got this Miata, and it's parked in my garage in my building. And my question is, should I get a car alarm for it? And the reason I ask this question is because not very long ago, I went down into the garage, and the seats had been stolen.
Oh,
really?
The seats. I went in there to drive to work, and there were no seats. And so I'm thinking, who would come in and buy seats? And wouldn't that person be clever enough to figure out, especially on a convertible, to figure out how to bypass an alarm?
Well, was the top down?
Okay, the top was down, but the garage was locked.
Oh, you might as well have put a sign on the thing that said, steal my seats or anything else you want.
Well, I mean, the car alarm would not have helped.
I would have put the top
it
up.
Probably. Oh, you would have put the top up, but it wouldn't have saved the seats.
Would it?
Well, maybe not.
Oh, no, because many of those car alarms have a motion detector.
Right. If it had a motion detector, then it would have saved the seats.
Oh, yeah, they
seats.
All do. They all do. So if the thing started rocking back and forth, then it would have set off the alarm and he would have run away.
Right. And if they had opened the door, it would have set off the alarm.
Right, but I mean, would anyone even have paid attention to an alarm?
Of course not. They just consider them a nuisance.
Right.
When I hear an alarm go off, I go the other direction.
Well, the thing is, if it's in your garage, in a building.
Well, you know, this had to have been an inside job.
I guess so.
You must have ticked off one of your neighbors, huh?
This is not a private garage. This is a big garage with many cars in it.
Well, by San Francisco standards, it's got 16 cars in it. And it's got, next to me, is one of the most fabulous-looking Porsches I've ever seen. And it makes my car look just kind of...
Well, I think you should steal his seats.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, no, I got new seats, and it smelled like a new car after I got the new seats put in. But it was very silly for a while. I mean, even the guy who came to tow the car down to the dealership laughed at me.
You didn't drive it down?
What was I
going to do? Jeez. Well, I think the alarm would help. It's often the case that people go and get these things after this kind of a mishap.
Right, closing the barn door.
Yeah,
the
but
horse
I think,
is left,
I sure. think it is worth it. I mean, it's too bad. And I mean, it may never happen again.
Right.
Unless somebody wants two brand new seats because they know where to find them.
Well, aside from the inconvenience, was there any out-of-pocket costs?
Just the insurance deductible, and they stole some CDs.
Did they cover those?
No, they didn't cover the CDs, and I was trying to think of what the burglars would think of, because most of my CDs are classical or even opera. It would be a little bit weird if they're just flying down the street listening to
Vivaldi,
you know, yeah. Yeah, you know, or the Ride of the Valkyries or something.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't do anything. I'd get the new. What are the chances they're going to come back? I mean, they already have your seats.
Well, I guess it's right now all I want to do is put the top up on the car all the time, which is kind of it's not very hard. It's a good top to put up. It's easy. But even so, you kind of like the idea of just kind of slipping in and zooming away.
I mean, the very essence of a car like the Miata is freedom.
Exactly.
And if you have to be worried every minute about someone stealing the car or breaking in and stealing seats or CDs, then, I mean, what's the sense of having the car? You might as well just hang yourself. I mean, come on. Why else would anyone have a car? I say no alarm, no top up. Freedom is what you want. You want to just be easy.
That's why you moved to California.
Yeah.
You got it.
I would not bother with the alarm.
Nor would I.
Okay, then.
You know what to do? Get a knife and cut those seats all up. They'll be so unattractive, no one will steal them. See you, Betsy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've eviscerated another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blooper. And Alosa, our web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Sanibel, Tagliatelle, Taco Bell, Raw Chanterelle, Mortadelle, and Creme Caramel Supper Bell, is Sean Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shawa. Our defense attorney is Hieronymus B. Blind. The head of our organ donation program is Olivia McCollin. Our head of alterations is Toulouse Toulong. Our wardrobe assistant is Joaquin Closet. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz, who's married to our father-in-law liaison, Royal Payne Diaz, who are the proud parents of a teenage daughter, Sasha Royal Payne Diaz. And the head of our Working Mothers Support Group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Brooks Brothers wearing bums in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and above all, don't drive like my brother.
And if you think about it, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1236, download some classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, lousy cars and the people who drive them.
Finally, a topic we can address with credibility.
Well, I can.
All this week at cartalk.com, every one of our Car Talk bloggers is writing about the worst car they've ever owned. Like Jim Motovalli's VW Squareback that has such bad rust, he actually put his foot right through the floorboards.
I call that air conditioning.
Classic stories of lousy cars and a chance to tell us your story right now over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR landscaper takes a long, hard look at his wood chipper whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.